Saudi Abu Nima and Jeremiah Wright. Drones over Pakistan, Yemen and Libya. Is Obama the bomber getting ready for Syria? First black president, the masses were hungry, but the same president just bombed an African country like...
The strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit.
The Jonas Brothers are here. They're out there somewhere. Sasha and Malia are huge fans. But boys don't get any ideas. I have two words for you. Predator drones. You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
Do you think this war will ever end?
I don't know. They'll just have another one.
I want to get out of here. Don't you?
Not that much.
So you like it here?
It's not that bad.
You're in a foxhole with a war raging outside.
I know. That's why I'm sure glad I've got my WBAI.
Be glad you've got your WBAI. Become a member online at WBAI.org. Now, do it now.
This Thursday morning from 6 to 8, WBAI presents A Delicate Balance, remembering Marion McPartland. Marion, who passed away last week, began her radio career right here on WBAI in 1964 and brought her classic taste in jazz to our air for the next 14 years. We'll talk with those who knew her, and we'll let Marion select our morning's music. This Thursday, September 5th, from 6 to 8 a.m. on 99.5 WBAI and WBAI.org.
Hi, this is Marion McPartland, and that's The Intimacy of the Blues. Duke Ellington at the piano. And that's one of my all-time favorite records. We're going to call this show A Delicate Balance.
Thursday morning at 6 on WBAI.
Music will be delicate, and we hope it will all
Hi,
be.
Hi, I'm Rosie Perez, and this is WBAI.
And it is WBAI, and this is Jim Freund. I am live. I am so sorry. I'm having a really fascinating, fun discussion over the history of BAI and stuff like that right outside our studio here with Ahmad Ali, who comes on the air very shortly. And I'm taking a look occasionally at my tablet and stuff like that. And all of a sudden I go, holy fud, my show has already begun. And so now I've come in here and now I'm telling you this and now I'm discovering that the... my little folder of themes isn't on this computer. Well, ha-ha. That's why we have USB thingies. And actually, here in these studios... I'm sorry, I'm just looking at a memo. Don't let the door lock as it hits you in the ass. Don't forget background briefing at 5 a.m., as ever, I can't read this. Oh, it's loaded in the top of card player and sign on, take readings. Well, I don't know who it is who's supposed to sign on now, but hey, I know I'm supposed to begin. And oh, yes, look at that. Here is my opening theme music. It will be a fun and yet somber show. Because, sadly, we are going to be dealing with Has this stopped playing? Where are the headphones? Do we have headphones in this room? Jeez. Yeah, it stopped playing. Okay, I'm safe as far as it goes to start my theme music. So let's do that, and then you'll find out what it's all about. Shall we try that again, see if the player will play? Oh, for God's sake. Somebody screwed up this computer. Which always happens. Stand by while we tell it that WAV files are to be played with something different. Okay, here we are. I think. Yeah. There's my wolf. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly science fiction program, or something like that. I usually say weekly radio program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor. But, oh, I began so screwy this morning and all that, to the point where I'm just going to begin the show now. Let the theme run under me instead of letting it swell up and talk over me and playing music. Because we have an agenda this morning. And to do that agenda, I'm going to have to do what I always do, is wax poetically, hopefully, and so perhaps somewhat accurately, about my own life and WBAI. I began volunteering here in 1967, and I was working for Baird Searles, who was our drama and literature director, and a major maven within the world of science fiction. I was sort of an acolyte, as it were, and through him I was meeting some of the great people in science fiction. And I was also getting involved in science fiction by attending parties held by the Science Fiction Writers of America and the Nebula Awards. By the way, the Hugo Awards were this past weekend. And I was very pleased by some of them and very shrugged by others. And if we have time, I may discuss it. But I was attached to the music department in the Free Music Store, and I was working with Margot Adler, who was just stepping down as news director to start a radio show in January 1972 called Hour of the Wolf, Mondays through Fridays, 5 to 7 a.m. It was actually a deal that Adler made, that if she would step down as news director and accept unemployment, she could get this show. And BAI wasn't on the air 24 hours a day. We'd sign off somewhere between like 3 and 5 a.m. or whenever FAS or Post, whoever was on the night before, felt bored. So they rarely got off by 3, and in the case of Bob, sometimes not by 5, but that was okay. It's free-form radio, as was Hour of the Wolf. But I got to do a couple of fill-ins for people as the science fiction maven. And I got to do my very first live radio show with as sole host on my own somewhere in 1971. I have the tape at home, but it's on a 10-inch reel-to-reel tape, too, because each 10-inch tape at 7.5 inches per second is 1 hour. And I do have these, but, you know, they have to be transferred into something digital. And WBAI doesn't have the resources to do them. And if you want to see what it takes and how many tapes, I have literally over 1,000 hours of tape that need to be turned into digital stuff. There's a very good little documentary about my tape collection on a site called narrative.ly. But if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see I've got it pinned also in the Hour of the Wolf group on Facebook. So anyway, so I don't have that tape. Why is that relevant? Because my first guests were three of the top names in science fiction. Isaac Asimov. Okay. I had met Isaac at some Nebula Awards function. And he said, yeah, sure, I'll do your show. So it's like, okay, how do I get in touch with you? Do you have a card? He said, no, you just look me up. I go to the phone book. And I look up, and there's, you know, Asimov, comma, Isaac. West 81st Street. I thought, well, you know, it's a celebrity. Can't be. I call up. He goes, hello. I said, Isaac, it is you. I didn't think I'd actually, you know, that this was you listed in the phone book. He said, I know. I've been trying to get them to list me as the Dr. Isaac Asimov, but they won't do it. Typical Ike. Typical Isaac. You know, that ego. So, and by the way, yes, that's a fair approximation of his voice. Anyway, Isaac, I was scared stiff. Isaac was quite a handful. He was a very effusive personality, and he had friends, and I had friends that were pros, all-time pros on radio, because they were regulars on Long John Nibble's show on WOR. And they were Lester Del Rey and Frederick Pohl. Fred died yesterday. 93 years young. If I had been hosting the show truly on my own, it would have been a disaster. But Fred Pohl was a pro. He made me look good. He kept Isaac in line, which is not, let me tell you, an easy thing to do. And by the way, Happy New Year, everybody, for those who observe New Year at this time of year. And I became pretty good friends with Fred Pohl. Not close or anything. We didn't socialize. But he was at Bantam Books. He was an editor there. And I could earn a little money doing proofreading, a little first reading, analysis of unsolicited manuscripts, and stuff like that. And as the editor at Bantam, Fred was quite a force. Now, by this time, he had already written the book The Space Merchants, co-written with C.M. Kornbluth, which has sold millions of copies and been translated into 45 languages. He was a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science in 1982. I'm reading his obit from yesterday's New York Times, written by Gerald Jonas, which is actually a very good obit. There was a time when a science fiction writer died. It was like, yeah, okay. You know, they got the same obit as anybody else. But now, especially with Gerald Jonas still, I don't know if he's on staff or a stringer there or what. I assume he's a stringer. they know what they're talking about. And so I'm cribbing a lot of my information. Fred Pohl was born in New York City on November 26th, spent most of his childhood in Brooklyn. He dropped out of high school at 17, as soon as it was legal, he said. I got him beat. I dropped out of high school the day I turned 16. So I had Fred beat by a year, I guess. But he and I are both high school dropouts. To this day, I do not have a diploma. And to his dying day, 2 days ago, Fred didn't have a diploma. So we were bonded with our lack of whatever. Fred became a literary agent and an editor before he was 20 years old. As an agent, he represented the work of his friends to the established science fiction magazines, some of his own. And he was editing Astonishing Stories and Super Science Stories, which he edited from 1940 through the summer of 1941. He was an army weatherman in Italy during World War II. Then he became a literary agent again, late 40s. Science fiction was becoming respectable. Oh, I wouldn't say that. But it was becoming published. People would buy it and they would hide it, you know, putting a lurid magazine. But, you know, science pulp magazines, science fiction magazines were, you know, genre. It was that Buck Rogers stuff. It was, it still isn't considered respectable. Today you say science fiction, I go, yeah, I really liked the Avengers last year, man. It's like, yeah, okay, I did too, but, you know, I'm sorry, Joss, that's comic books, it's not science fiction. That's Ken Gale territory, not Jim Freund territory, okay? Nothing against, I mean, I watched the Avengers 3 bleeping times, okay? Enough said, which began as an offshoot of Hour of the Wolf, Ahmad. Well, that's a phrase from Marvel
Comics. From Marvel Comics.
Yeah, it's a phrase from Marvel Comics. Enough said. But Ken Gale, maybe you realize, did a radio show called Enough Said.
Yes, I used to listen to it.
Yeah, right, which is a great show.
And Ken Gale Wrestling, too, was it also?
No, that was
Fred Giebold.
His name is Fred Kuhn. K-U-H-N. Fred Kuhn. I don't know where he got this Giebold thing from. His name is Fred Kuhn. I knew Fred Kuhn from Science Fiction Fandom. I brought him into WBAI, where he then became switchboard operator and stuff like that. And he eventually did radio shows, and he brought in Mike Sargent and stuff like that. But I begat Fred. I also begat Ken. I didn't bring Ken into WBAI. I just gave him airtime. He was doing like a hard rock radio
show. One thing to say to Mike Sargent, bring back the Russian super boots.
Oh, God, help us all. Mike did a segment on Fred's show, which was on 3 to 5 before Hour of the Wolf. So that was that genesis. At any rate, getting back to Fred Pohl, as opposed to Fred Kuhn or Fred Giebold, or all two of those three people, blah, blah, blah. The 70s saw the blossoming of Mr. Pohl's own writing career. Yeah, I mean, he was, as a writer, the Space Merchants, his collaborations with Jack Williamson and C.M. Kornbluth, some of which you will hear in just a few minutes, remain among some of the best science fiction ever. As an editor at Bantam Books, in 1973, let's name two books that Fred Pohl bought. The Female Man by Joanna Russ and Dahlgren by Samuel R. Delaney, which the New York Times describes as a vast experimental work that owed as much to James Joyce as H.G. Wells. Although the book met resistance at first from the Bantam sales force, Dahlgren went on to sell more than a million copies. Now, what I would really like to do with this show is I would like to have Chip Delaney, Samuel R. Delaney, on. He's one of the first people I worked with here at WBAI. I made all of his work at WBAI possible. That is to say, I fetched the coffee. He was working on the Star Pit. I was 13 or 14 years old, and I was good for something. Gopher. So, you know, somebody's not getting the coffee or the other recreational I wasn't leered.
Adult beverages?
I wasn't allowed near those. I wasn't allowed near those because I was but 13 years old. So I was not made that aware, although I noticed pungent smells around the WBAI studios at 39th Street. Very pleasant. Very pleasant. But as an editor, Fred Pohl made a major impact on the industry. He's considered a grandmaster. He's considered one of the grand old men of science fiction, you know, the white-haired white guys and all that. And yet, as the literature was changing with the new wave, books like Dangerous Visions that helped bring Joanna Russ and all that to literary phase, Fred wrote a story called The Day After the Day the Martians Came, which is one of the great stories about racism and stuff for its time. You read it today, I think you will still appreciate it if you just say, this is 1968. Just remember that when you read that story, and it holds up. That was made into a Marvel comic as well, by the way. So, but as a publisher, Dahlgren, gay, black, 1,000-page book, science fiction, great science fiction. The Female Man by Joanna Russ, one of the great feminist works in literary SF, and women were only starting to make their forays into science fiction. African Americans or black people in general, all people of Cherie Renee Thomas. Oh, she's going to clobber me when I see her next. Cherie Renee Thomas put out this anthology about 1990 called Dark Matter. And that is really the beginning of science fiction by black writers really coming into their own. Before that point, you could name maybe five or six: Octavia Butler, Samuel R. Delaney, this person, that person, and so forth. After that, it all blossoms. It all opens up. Fred Pohl was doing it in 1973. Okay, and that was sort of my point there. And then Fred started writing the Heechee series, starting with the book Gateway, which holds up today. Many of his works, his short stories, his novels, they all held up. The last novel in the Heechee saga came out in 2004, The Boy Who Would Live Forever, and I won't say it was as good as Gateway, but it held up. It really did. Fred was a remarkable man. As an editor, he changed science fiction. As an agent, he brought new voices. As a collaborator with people like Cyril Kornbluth and Jack Williamson, he was a stalwart member of science fiction as important as Heinlein or Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke. As a writer on his own, he wrote some of the classic science fiction. And he moved out of New York, maybe about 10 years ago. No, 15 years ago. And I stopped seeing him, and I started missing him then, and he died 2 days ago, and I miss him more. I want to see a nice picture of me and Fred. Go to my Facebook page. I got a lovely photograph of the two of us there. So, I mean, I have a lot of Fred Pohl stories I can tell, because the time that he and I were at a Worldcon, and he went out and he bought a bottle of Retsina and sat me down to got me to drink this bizarre wine, Greek wine. I on first taste, I thought it was like kerosene. But it really has its advocates. It really does. It like dissolves on your tongue in this very bizarre manner. But Fred was a real connoisseur of Retsina. Okay. Anyway. We're going to hear a radio drama of the Space Merchants, produced at CBS in 1957. It is a novel. It is old-time radio. But it is one of Fred's many, many legacies. And it's in two parts. And I've been waxing, hopefully eloquently and all that, nostalgically. I've been waxing nostalgically. It is time now to actually hear some of Fred's work. What I will pledge to do... Oh, I produced a 2.5-hour radio drama of one of Fred's novellas, The Gold at the Starbow's End. I was very proud of that. Over 40 readers. It's not really a drama, it's dramatic reading. And what I did was I forced every last bleeping person at the radio station to take a role. It's a big, sprawling epic of a story. I got the news director, I got... the narrator was Margot Adler. Fred did a few lines. The station manager at the time, Jerry Coffin, did a few lines. We got everybody in there. I don't have a copy of it. If anybody listening should have a copy of the radio version that I produced of The Gold at the Starbow's End, please let me know. Write Jim at ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF. I will be extremely grateful. Even if the quality isn't good, I want that sucker. But I'm also going to call around and get a few people like Delaney and people who... Michael Swanwick. Oh, my God. How can I not... Oh, I have to do this. I have to do this first. Next Tuesday, because next time I'm on the air is Wednesday. I'm not going to be on before then. This coming Tuesday, September 10th, it's Michael Swanwick. I'll get Swanwick to talk about Fred Pohl. Yes, and I'll get him to do it on Tuesday when he comes into New York for my reading series. Damn it, I'm not promoting my own reading series. The New York Review of Science Fiction Readings presents Rick Bowes, Richard Bowes, who regular listeners will recognize, and he's a wonderful, brilliant writer. And Michael Swanwick, who has lost more awards in science fiction than anybody else. That is to say, he's been nominated so many times, and he's won a lot of awards. I think there are people who may have won as many or more. But nobody's been more nominated than Michael, which means that nobody has lost more awards than Michael. Admission is free. It takes place at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art at 183 Sullivan Street. Anyhow, Sullivan Street between Prince and Houston. Look for little posters outside. We do ask for donations on your way in to help support the reading series. Just getting it ready, I have spent so far on this one reading on my own $90. And then we buy the readers dinner afterward and all that. And you're all invited to dinner with us to witness that we spend the money well. Michael Swanwick drinks martinis, by the way. And so that's Tuesday. For more information, visit either ourwolf.com and then click on New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and or go to Facebook and join the NYRSF, N-Y-R-S-F, readings group. And I try to make it public, but for some reason, people need to, I have to add them to the group. So you just click there, and I'll add you to the group, and you'll get all the information that you need. And on Facebook, you'll get like one mailing a month. That's pretty much it. Okay. Jeez. Almost didn't promote that in time. Okay, so this is WBAI in New York City. This is not CBS. So bear that in mind as you listen to CBS Workshop. Thank you.
The CBS Radio Works Imagination, the theater of the mind. Today, the space merchants. Frederick Poles and C.M. Kornbluth's modern classic about the future when the wizards of high-pressure salesmanship take over. It's the story of Mitchell Courtney, a copy smith, star class with Fowler Shock and Associates, the biggest and greatest advertising firm of the future, and a tale of a rocket ride to Venus.
As I rubbed depilatory soap on my face and waited for my beard to melt away, I switched on the news over the bathroom mirror. A funny little man whom I finally recognized as the president had given another speech last night. There was a shot of the Venus rocket, squat and silvery on the Arizona sands. The report of rioting in Panama, the Conti underground probably. Then the phone rang. Hello.
Chief, you're due at the office.
Can't you see I'm dressing?
Oof, why that tie?
Never mind. Why are you phoning me?
Mr. Shawkins called a board meeting a half an hour early. He's going to name the head of the Venus Project today, so hurry.
Hester, do me a favor. Will you call my wife, Dr. Nevin? Make an appointment at noon for Walter J. Silver.
For who?
Walter J. Silver.
Are you crazy?
Well, she won't talk to me, Hester. Use the fake name. Maybe I can get in.
All right. Now get down here fast.
Down on Fifth Avenue, there wasn't a pedicab in sight. For a moment, I thought I had a Cadillac with two men peddling it, but somebody else got it. I did the best I could. I hopped aboard the rolling northbound sidewalk and found myself hemmed in by a milling, perspiring group of consumers. I got off at Chalkin Towers and rode the express elevator to our offices on the 182nd floor. By sheer luck, I'd just taken my seat with my fellow board members when Fowler Shocken walked in.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Shocken.
Now, sit down. I'm going to stand for a moment. I've just come back on the moon rocket, as you know. Want to stretch my legs.
How is our project on the moon, Mr. Shocken?
Gentlemen, I'm proud. And I'm humble when I say it's successful. The mining ventures are bringing the people here on Earth many of the metals our forefathers exhausted long ago. The colonists seem quite untouched by the Conti revolutionists. Only instances of Conti sabotage in the past week. Thank you. Now I'd like to hear some reports on our other projects. Industrial anthropology.
Well, I wish to report that according to the midnight indices, all primary schools east of the Mississippi are being fed our Fowler Shock and Package school lunches, soy burger, and regenerated steak. Now, these lunches are being packaged in our Star's alias Red, which means that in the future, these young consumers will be completely conditioned to buying everything packaged in our special color, Star's alias Red. They'll have no choice.
Magnificent, magnificent. Now, let's hear from point of sale.
Well, Mr. Shocken, sir, we have tested our latest beverage, Coffeeist, in 15 key cities. Each sample of Coffeeist contains 3 milligrams of a simple alkaloid. Nothing harmful, but definitely habit-forming. After 10 weeks, the customer is hooked for life. A cure will cost $1,000, so it's easier to buy more Coffeeist. 3 cups with every meal and a hot jug beside the bed at night.
You know, gentlemen, on my trip back from the moon, I begin to wonder, are we getting soft?
No, sir, Mr. Shocken.
Thank you, Matt. But I wonder, were we doing enough for our consumers? Those consumers sleeping out there on the stairways. I know how lucky they are being able to buy the wonderful goods we make, package and sell them. Seaweed suits, soya burger, regenerated steak, coffees, straw butt cigarettes. But I still wondered, were we in the upper classes of advertising getting soft? But now I've decided Fowler Shock and Associates is not soft. That it's ready to meet a challenge greater than our organizing India into one giant cartel. Greater than our development of the moon. The greatest challenge the world of advertising and promotion has ever met. The colonizing of Venus.
Shocken's sense of the dramatic was never better. The touch of a button on the conference table before him, the lights were dimmed. Another touch of a button, and one wall of the room became a giant projection screen. We are looking at it again. The Venus rocket. But this time we knew that one of us would be named to head the Venus project.
There she stands, gentlemen. The Venus rocket. A thousand-foot monster, surrounded now by steel scaffolding and aglow with welding torches. And here's how you'll see her 6 months from now, just before the takeoff. Just before the takeoff, there's the ship that Congress gave us, Fowler, Shock, and Associates. There's the ship that will span the stars. 6.5 million tons of trapped lightning and steel. A rocket-powered Mayflower for 1,800 pioneers seeking a new world to settle. Who will man it? Gentlemen, it's our job, A, to justify my buying enough congressmen to vote us that rocket. B, to sell 1,800 crazy consumers on giving up life on the Earth for the sulfur and nitrogen and canned life on Venus.
Yes, sir, Mr. Shocken. Yes, sir.
I've made my choice of the man to head up our Venus rocket project. His name is Mitchell Courtney.
Congratulations, Mitch.
Thanks, Matt.
Terrific break for a young and experienced guy.
Yes, I'm flattered.
Fowler seemed to be sure he knew what he was doing.
He seemed to be sure.
Well, drop into my office anytime you need advice.
Yeah, thanks. I'll keep my back to the wall.
Good luck with Venus Project, Mitch. As far as I'm concerned, you can't sell people on life in a sardine can, even if you throw in a slave girl as a premium.
This way, Mr. Silver. Dr. Nevins will see you now.
Dr. Nevins?
Mitch, how did you get in?
I used another name. I had to see you, Kathy. After all, you're my wife.
I am not your wife.
My certificate's on file.
Mine isn't. It never will be. As soon as this year is up, we're through.
Wait. I've got some news.
Well, what is it?
I've been put in charge of the Venus Project at the agency.
Congratulations.
Oh, Kathy, I love you. I'm not above using this promotion as an excuse to celebrate. Won't you go out on the town with me tonight?
No.
Well, I promise not to make a scene. You're the only one I want to celebrate with.
All right, Mitch. My apartment at 7. And now let me take care of the sick people.
Outside Kathy's office, I hailed a two-man Cadillac pedicab and told them to step on it to Shocken Towers. I took the express elevator to the top of the towers. I ran across the heliport to Shocken's private helicopter. I had a very important date out of New York's newest airport at Montauk. I was due to meet the Earth's number one celebrity, Jack O'Shea. The first and only man who would ever set a rocket down on Venus and return. As I landed, his jet was just coming in. And as I jumped to the ground, his jet moved up the runway toward me, and the place was crawling with women. I'd forgotten what a swath Jack had cut with the women on his cross-country lecture tours. In fact, I'd almost forgotten until his Pinkerton cards cleared away through the vast crowds. I'd almost forgotten that Jack was a midget. Welcome to New York, Jack.
Hello, Mitch. I hear you're number one boy now.
Well, I still work for Fowler Shocken, Jack, but the Venus rocket project is mine.
You're a fool to take it.
Oh, you're joking.
Am I? All right, fellas, Mr. Courtney's from Fowler's shop, and you can check off now.
Yes, sir, Mr. O'Shea.
Crummy guards. I never get a free moment.
Well, that's the penalty for being a celebrity. This way, Jack, our helicopter's over here.
Hey, look out, Mitch. That cargo ship.
Darn fool pilot.
Run, Mitch, run! Hey, Mitch. Mitch, you all right?
Yes, I'm okay. Thanks a lot.
Mitch, that was no accident. That pilot had orders to get one of us, and I think it was you.
I had to start pumping Jack O'Shea about Venus. Schocken was paying him a fat retaining fee as a consultant. Jack didn't seem to want to talk, however. I showed him projections, maps, drawings, charts. But he barely said a word worth recording on tape. Suddenly an idea hit me. I made a phone call.
Oh, Kathy, do you know that this is the first time I've laughed, really laughed, since I came back to Earth?
Is it, Jack? I'm complimented.
And that this is the first time I've been alone with two people since I came back?
I thought you'd had enough of being alone in that rocket on Venus.
It must have been a shattering experience, Jack.
Kathy, you're the first person who seems to have understood that. Not exciting. Not thrilling. It was frightening. Shattering, as you said. It wasn't at all like what I've told the women's clubs, the reporters. That's been a pack of lies. The atmosphere, for instance. It's really formaldehyde. Embalming fluid. Who'd understand that? Except the dead. And the heat, who'd understand that? Who's lived in heat above the boiling point of water? If there was any water on Venus, which there isn't.
Why did you go, Jack?
That's easy. You're a doctor. You know about midgets. We eat one-third the food, drink one-third the liquids, inhale and exhale one-third the air full-size humans require. They'd never have gotten that test rocket to Venus if I hadn't been the size I am, if I hadn't been a child who's been laughed at, who'd turned test pilot to prove myself. I was so small they could pack me into that test rocket with all the equipment necessary to sustain me. 83 days. It takes a lot of equipment to sustain even a midget.
Six of those days were on Venus. What was it like, Jack?
I think the closest thing on Earth is the painted desert. The wind blows hard. It tears rocks apart. Soft rocks disappear and make dust storms. The light is funny. Nobody ever saw a light like that on Earth. Orangey, brownish light. Very, very bright, but threatening. And there's no water on Venus. No vegetation. No living thing.
In the quiet of Kathy's apartment, Jack O'Shea talked for another hour. Then suddenly, with hardly a word of goodbye, he stood up and walked out. Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for changing plans and letting me bring him.
Don't mention it, Mitch. Do you think you got it all on your little tape recorder?
You knew I had one in my pocket.
I was sure you would have. And I hope you play it back to yourself over and over and over.
Oh, Kathy.
Yes, over and over and over. Until even you were convinced how hopeless your Venus project is.
Hopeless? Oh, our science boys have answers to all those objections.
Mitch, doesn't that mind of yours ever stop selling somebody something? Do you have to be a contriving, selfish Machiavelli who served Fowler, Schocken, and never people?
People? You mean consumers?
Oh, Mitch, must you always be top dog, making money, 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 without scruples, without ethics? What was that?
A gunshot.
Jack's out there.
Well, I'll go and see. Oh, he's all right. Those are his steps.
Mitch! Mitch, I was standing talking with a doorman and someone shot him in cold blood. Someone thought that doorman was you.
Well, Mitch, trouble with the Venus project already?
Personal trouble, Mr. Schocken.
Personal trouble?
Yes, yesterday afternoon a cargo helicopter tried to drop its full load on me. Last night somebody tried to shoot me. I've had a couple of head-on collisions with Matt Runstead.
Are you accusing a Shocking man? That's treason. Killing an agency employee is an offense against the United States government. Any idea who's behind this?
No. Well, it might be the Consies, of course.
Well, conservationists hate us. They're trying to sabotage everything we want to do, but they're crazy, mixed up, unorganized. They want to go back to the old days when we had natural wood, natural water, all that sort of claptrap. Forget them.
Well, it could be another advertising agency.
It could be. But look, Mitch, I made you copysmith, star class, because I thought you could live up to your responsibilities. Now, you're young, but you have power. 5 words from you, and a few months later, 500 million consumers will find their lives completely changed. That's power. Absolute power. So you must remember, power has its compensation and its hazards. That's all.
With this encouragement, I continued work on the Venus Project for the next 6 weeks. I even talked Kathy into giving up her patience for 48 hours and taking a flying trip with me to Arizona. I wanted to get the feel of the giant rocket itself as it was being built.
Your credentials, please. Army intelligence, check. Navy intelligence, check. Air Force intelligence, check. FBI, check. AEC, check. CIA, check. 4A's, check. I hope you two are all right. This way, please.
Kathy and I followed the security officer into the vast steel shell of the Venus rocket.
1,257 feet high. More cubits than the average New York apartment building.
He took us into the dormitories for the 1,800 pilgrims I had to sell on the idea of going to Venus.
Closed cycle food, water, and air regeneration. One-third living space, one-third drive, one-third freight.
It was an inferno. And a promise of paradise. A monument to 22nd century engineering. And an incomparable monument to the sheer artistry of the machine.
Mitch, do you always have to talk like a copysmith?
Huh? Oh, I noticed you were impressed too, Kathy.
Well, it draws me. And repels me. I can't explain it.
It excites me. Kathy, how'd you like to go on to San Diego with me?
Whatever for?
Well, Matt Runstead's boys in our San Diego office have been gathering test figures on our sample colonizing campaigns. Very helpful.
No, I can't come, Mitch. I'd love to, but my patients back in New York need me.
Oh. Well, then I'll get you aboard the return jet and see you in New York in 48 hours. I didn't tell them I was coming to San Diego. I walked in on our entire San Diego staff playing push-button poker. What's the meaning of this?
Oh, who are you, mister?
Mitchell Courtney.
Hey, it's Courtney from New York, fellas.
What are the reports on the Venus sampling, Harris?
There aren't any, sir.
Tally sheets, punch card codes, Sigma progress charts. Nothing on the attitudes of consumers toward life on Venus?
Well, nothing, sir. Nothing.
You've made up everything you've given me so far.
Well, I'm afraid so, sir.
Well, get New York on the line. I want Matt Runstead.
Well, he's not there.
Well, where is he?
Well, he called this morning. He's taken off for Little America to look after our interests there.
And left you holding the bag, huh? Find out when the next jet leaves for Little America. Little America is a dollar trap for the tourists of the world, conceived and promoted by Fowler Shockin. The clerk at our hotel told me Runstead had checked in for a 2-day tour of the Starzalius Glacier, that he already had started out on the trail. I rented the glacier equipment, Antarctic coveralls, hood, gloves, boots, and power pack to warm them. And on my back, I had an EDF that went beep, beep when I was on the trail, and beep, beep when I lost my way in the snow. I set out after Runstead, beeping and still mad. I stopped after a while and cooked a meal in my electric pocket. It wasn't bad. Well, very bad. I had some coffee to pep me up, and then I set out again. My feet hit a drift, and I stumbled.
The wind was blowing stronger now. The snow flurries were more frequent. I must have gone on another hour. How far in distance, I don't know. And then up ahead, I saw the figure of a man. Matt! Matt Lunstead!
Matt! Matt Courtney!
Matt, I've been following you.
Me? What do you want with me, Matt?
I want to know what happened in the San Diego office. What are you up to, Matt? A sudden blast of wind hurled snow into my face, and then, as it cleared, I saw Matt raising his skis high above his head. I saw them coming down toward me as he pole-axed me.
The CBS Radio Workshop has brought you part one of The Space Merchants, adapted for radio by Charles Monroe, with original music composed and conducted by Samuel Matlofsky. Produced and directed in New York by Paul Roberts. Stotz Cotsworth starred as Mitch Courtney, Virginia Kay as Kathy. The sound effects were devised by Tom Buchanan and Tom Perkins, the engineer Jack Katz. This is Ted Pearson inviting you to join us next week for the second part of the CBS Radio Workshop production of The Space Merchants.
The CBS Radio Workshop has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
But here at WBAI in our special time machine, we're taking you back to 1957 for the CBS Radio Workshop production of The Space Merchants by Frederick Pohl and C.M. Kornbluth, one of the classic greats in science fiction, co-written. Well, both of them were classic greats of science fiction, but Fred Pohl passed away on September 2nd. At age 93, and we are playing The Space Merchants to commemorate him. We will be doing more Fred Pohl programming in the not-too-distant future. I did a good deal of work with him. He was a friend while he lived in the New York area, and our paths coincided mostly in the 70s. Mostly in the 70s is when I knew Fred. And early 80s. But, well, enough said about that. They said on CBS, tune in next week for part two, and I don't think we need to wait that long. Let me just remind you that this is WBAI in New York City, and we will now skip ahead to next week.
A cargo jet in the 22nd century.
Here's a man we had trouble with in the hold, Lieutenant.
What's his complaint?
Well, he claims he's Mitchell Courtney, a copysmith star class of the Fowler's Shock and Advertising Company. He says he's been shanghaied aboard this jet.
Roll up his sleeve. Let's see his social security tattoo. 1304-9974-1416-156-187723. Liar! Get him out of here. If he's with Shock and Advertising, he'd have a low number.
Can't you see it's been altered? Let me use the radio and talk to Mr. Shockin himself.
Where from, Mr. Courtney? The dead? Take a look at this copy of today's New York Times, dated February 17th, 2157.
Mitchell Courtney, head of the Venus rocket project at the Fowler Shockin advertising firm, has been found dead in Little America. Now, wait a minute. A man by the name of Matt Lunstead knocked me out there. But can't you see that I'm alive? I am Mitchell Courtney.
You can prove that after 10 years.
10 years?
My manifest shows that you're not an advertising man. You're only a consumer named George Groby. You've signed up for 10 years labor in Costa Rica. And those 10 years begin as soon as this jet sets down. Take him back to the hold.
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. The CBS Radio Workshop continues part two of The Space Merchants by C.M. Kornbluth and Frederick Pohl. Today, the workshop resumes the story of Mitchell Courtney, copysmith star class with the world's greatest advertising agency of the future, Fowler Schock & Associates. The tale of a rocket ride to Venus.
I lay on my filthy bunk in the hold of the cargo jets, trying to think of a way to get back to New York. I wanted to find out why Matt Runstead had knocked me out and had me shanghaied. Who wanted to get me off the Venus Project, the advertising campaign we dreamed up to colonize Venus? I wanted to get back to my wife, Kathy. But there was nothing I could do until this cargo jet landed in Costa Rica.
Move, you scum skimmers! Get in line! Now, what's your name?
Mitchell Courtney.
Mitchell Courtney. Oh, yeah. You're the bum we had trouble with on the plane.
Sorry, my name is George Groby.
Oh, that's better. What do you want to do here, Groby? Got any choice of jobs?
Anything. Anything the sun-drenched plantations of Costa Rica have to offer. I'm here to clasp the deft hands of independent farmers with pride in their work. I'm here to extract the juicy, ripe goodness of chlorella protein.
Say, how'd you learn that? That's our prime impact commercial.
Learn it. I wrote it. But don't let that stand in your way.
Groby, you're not going to get anywhere being a wise guy.
Yes, sir.
You're assigned as a chlorella scum skimmer third class. Report for duty and assignment to a bunk at Tier 48 in Dormitory Z.
The heart of chlorella products is a strange, glutinous, ever-growing organism called Chicken Little. It provides one-third of the world with the protein that replaces old-fashioned meat. It grows in huge, sweating vats. And only the constant slicing keeps it from overgrowing and covering Costa Rica and its neighbors, or in time, the face of the earth. I had written of its delight many times in the agency, but I now came to know it firsthand. I was assigned to skim the scum which dripped from its side.
She stinks pretty bad, don't she, Jorge?
She's high, Herrera.
But she's beautiful, Chicken Little, eh, Jorge?
Well, she's pretty awful.
Jorge, this is the first time I ever hear you say the advertisements are wrong. Go into town with me tonight, eh, Jorge?
I'd made one friend, a master slicer named Herrera. He'd been aloof and standoffish at first, befitting his high station, but now he'd befriended me, done me a lot of favors. I didn't know why until that night we went on the town to a dark, almost empty cafe.
Jorge, I have watched you very carefully. You don't belong here doing this work.
Well, don't I? How am I ever going to get out?
You have the brains, Jorge, not like the others.
Oh, thanks. What good are brains here? I'm so tired half the time I can't think.
Jorge, I'm going to put my life in your hands. Do you ever hear of the CONCIS?
The CONCIS, of course.
You know what the CONCIS stand for?
Sure, World Conservation Association.
I mean their ideas. Oh, I know you have heard they are dangerous.
Well, they want a revolution. They want to go back to the old ways. Real meat, real grains and fruit. They want a break for the consumer, they say. Nothing in packages, nothing tested and guaranteed.
Do you think they are so wrong after 6 months here? Here, Jorge, take this pamphlet. Read it. Then talk to me again. Or denounce me. I am not afraid.
The Consi Underground opposed everything a self-respecting 22nd century advertising man like me believed. I would have denounced Herrera to the chlorella authorities the next day, except for one thing. If I joined the Consis first,
If I learned their organization and secrets, I'd have a better bargaining position in getting back to New York. I joined them. The irony was the Contis were a lot better organized than I'd suspected, and after 6 months, they decided they needed me in New York, and it was they who engineered my return to the city. I returned to New York on a secret mission for the Contis. 2 weeks after being in New York, I got the secret sign to attend a Conti meeting at the Metropolitan Museum. As my first taste of luxury in more than a year, I hailed a Cadillac pedicab and told the driver to take me to the Metropolitan Museum.
You can't do better than to visit the Metropolitan Museum, mister. World's greatest masterpieces. Don't miss the painting on the first floor. It's called I Dreamed I Was Ice Fishing in My Wonderform Bra.
Yeah, I read it brought $1.5 million.
Not a cent less. Don't miss the theatrical collection. It got dancing cigarettes. Say, you mind if we stop a second? These new Cadillac cabs are hard to pedal. Okay, get out.
Oh, no, you don't. What's the idea of the gun?
I recognize you when you walked out of Grand Central, Mr. Mitchell Courtney.
What do you want with me?
I want you to get out of the cab and come with me to the Taunton Agency. They've offered a big, fat, juicy reward for anybody who'll bring them the inside story of Fowler Schocken's Venus Rocket Project. And you're the boy who headed it up.
So you're the boys who shanghaied me and got me off the project.
No, we're not. I don't know who did. But we're sure glad we found you. The boy with all those nice secrets about colonizing Venus. Taunton wants those secrets. Come on, get out of here.
Drop that gun. Drop it or I'll break your neck. I grabbed the gun and hit him behind the ear. Then I ran across Fifth Avenue and lost myself in a group of consumers on the sidewalk rolling back toward Schocken Towers. I jumped off and ran to the express elevator. Down the corridor to Schocken's office. It was dark and deserted. Then down the corridor, I saw a light under my old office door. I walked up to it. And I didn't knock. Esther.
Mitch! Oh, no.
Esther, it's all right. I'm alive.
Oh, but Mitch, they said you were dead.
Who, Matt Lunstead?
Yes. Everyone believed him.
Did my wife, did Kathy believe him, Hester?
Yes.
Well, get her on the phone for me. Call her.
Well, she's disappeared, Mitch.
What?
No one's been able to find her. After the news of your death, she just closed her office and disappeared.
Maybe Schocken knows where she is. Where is Schocken, Hester?
Well, he caught the moon rocket yesterday morning. He was going over your notes on the Venus Project.
He's taking it over?
Yes, from Matt Rutherford. It was going bad.
I'll bet. Matt's trying to ruin our campaign. Hester, you've got to get me aboard the next moon rocket. Use the name George Groby. Runstead and a Taunton agency will try to stop a man named Courtney. I've got a lot to tell Mr. Schocken.
Passengers, this way, please. We are now on the moon. Tourists to the moon to the left, visitors on business to the right. Now for a name.
George Groby, copy analyst class 4.
Groby, copy analyst 4. Oh. Guard, yes. This way, please.
Yes, sir.
This man says his name is George Groby.
Fine. You're under arrest, Groby.
Let go of me. I'm here to see Fowler Schocken.
Mr. Runstead down on the earth told us to expect you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You may be interested to know that your secretary, Miss Hester Barnes, is being tried for treason.
Treason?
She is charged with forging documents and passing them to you. The 43rd Amendment to the United States Constitution. Treason to any registered advertising agency is punishable by death. Hold him for the return passage on a similar charge, guard.
Guard had his nightstick in my back as we walked down the streets, past storefronts with signs, moon-made fashions, stunning conversation pieces prove you were here. Souvenirs of Luna, cheapest in town. Moon suits rented, 50 years without a blowout. Ye tasty goody shop on ye moon. Warren Astron, readings by appointment only.
Hold it.
What is it?
You sure your name's Groby?
Positive.
Ever know a man named Herrera?
Well, yes, Herrera and I...
Wish we could find out what you're up to, Groby. Send out of Costa Rica to report in New York. Never show up at a meeting there. Then you turn up at Fowler Shockin's agency and get your passage on a moon rocket.
You mean you're a...
Shut up! Now go into Astron's there. He'll hide you till our top boss up here comes. First take my nightstick and knock me out with it, then point it at the streetlight and blast it out. Hit me hard, but not too hard. Oh, this is going to cost me 2 strikes and a week's pay. Oh.
My Conti training was really paying off. Astron took me in stride, hid me in a room under his floor, gave me something to eat, and I fell asleep. I waked with a light pouring down into my face.
You can come up now, Groby. The chief is here to see you. In that room back there. I'll see you're not disturbed.
Thanks.
Over here, into the light, Mr. Groby.
Kathy, what are you doing here?
Oh, Mitch, why didn't you stay on ice? What crazy thing have you done to turn up here?
Go on. I'm crazy. Why shouldn't I be crazy? My wife, a kingpin consi.
What a shock. You, a star-class copysmith, married to a consi.
Matt's one of you. You got Matt Runstead to Shanghai me.
Like a fool. I thought if I could get you away from Fowler Shock and I might bring you to your senses.
Trying to decide what was best for poor little Mitch.
Mitch, I loved you.
You loved me. You actually were in love with me.
Yes, I was, in spite of everything you stood for. But you are not going to talk to Fowler Shockin.
I'm not.
Mitch, I don't want you to ruin Venus the way you've ruined the world.
A woman of ideals. What do you plan to do with me?
Are you going to report to Fowler Shockin?
Yes.
Then there is nothing I can do for you.
Then let me tell you something before you turn me over to Astron and your friends outside. I've been shanghaied, robbed of my name, forced to work like a slave in the tropics. I've had all I can take of others deciding what to do about poor old Mitch. Your guard friend left this nightstick with me. You know what it does, Kathy. Get on that phone and call Fowler Shockin and tell him where I am. Then get out. Take your friends with you. I'll give you 2 days to vanish. But this time, stay out of sight forever. Go on. Call Shockin.
This is Dr. Nevins, Mitchell Courtney's widow. I'd like to speak to Mr. Shockin, please.
Mitch, my boy, I'm going to fatten you up and turn Venus section back to you. You know my policy. Find a good horse, give him his head, and back him to the limit. You've never let me down. And Venus section's in rotten shape. Nobody's applying for space on the Venus rocket. The whole campaign's at sea. The indices are down to 3.37 for North America. They should be 4 and rising. We've got to get those 1,800 consumers on board the Venus rocket.
When we got back to Earth, Matt Runstead had disappeared. I arranged for Hester to be released from Alcatraz, and she returned in triumph in Shockin's private jet. I began to whip the Venus rocket project back into shape. I was living again, writing new jingles, starting new rumors by word of mouth, developing new techniques, until finally...
Mitch, the big day has come. 1,800 consumers have volunteered to ride our rocket to Venus. Now, I've arranged for Congress to meet tomorrow, and my boy, I want you to address them as Fowler Shockin's personal representative requesting a takeoff date.
Gentlemen, the Senate is now in session. You all received a recording of the opening prayer last night. So let's hear from the Senator from Chlorella Limited.
The Senator from Chlorella Limited passes in deference to the Senator from Alaska Mining.
The Senator from Alaska Mining passes in favor of the Senator from United Steel and Smelting.
The Senator from United Steel and Smelting passes in favor of the Senator from Caribbean Fruit.
The Senator from Caribbean Fruit passes in favor of the Senator from Yummy Cola.
My dear fellow senators, I thank you all for graciously allowing me to speak before we pass upon this very important bill concerning the Venus rocket. The people of this great republic of ours, extending from Atlantic seaweed to Pacific fish.
Suddenly, I sensed something had gone wrong. I'd been sitting back thinking about Kathy, thinking of her face, her voice, her smile before we'd married. I was wondering where she was, what she thought of all this. Then the speaker's voice focused my attention upon him. I hadn't been worried. Father Schocken owned 2/3 of this gathering. But there was something about old Yummy Cola that troubled me. He wasn't addressing his fellows. He was looking up, addressing me. A big grin on his face. I leaned forward just in time for the weenie.
In a brief discussion I had before this session, Mr. Taunton gave me some information in private. But I feel it my public duty to ask a couple of questions of Mr. Courtney, who is present. I would like to ask Mr. Courtney if the name of George Groby is familiar to him. I would like to ask if Mr. Courtney is George Groby. I would like to ask Mr. Courtney if, when he was known as George Groby, he was a member in good standing of the World Conservationist Association, known to most of us loyal Americans as the country.
Below, there was a raging tidal wave of taunting congressmen and shocking congressmen battling. For the first time in history, shots were being fired in anger on the Senate floor. If Taunton hadn't tipped off old Yummy Cola, I knew who had. The conscience. Somehow I didn't mind. I realized that for some time now, I'd really been one of them. A little man beside me, dressed in black, suddenly seized my arm and led me out the side door.
You'll find a car outside ready to take you to the airport, Mr. Courtney.
What airport?
Don't stop to ask questions. Just go wherever you're taken. You'll be protected.
Fat chance.
You'll be all right. I guarantee that.
Who are you?
The president. Good luck. God bless you.
I had to admire that little man's courage. He'd walked back into that raging den of lions without a quiver. Aboard the jetliner, I wondered what would happen to him when they found out he'd sent me to safety. Or was it to safety? I tried to ask questions of the men aboard the liner, but they looked the other way and kept absolutely quiet.
You can climb out now, Mr. Courtney. They're all ready for you over there at the Venus rocket. There's no time to lose.
Hey, look here. I don't want to go to Venus. Who's in charge here? I won't go aboard that rocket.
Everybody's aboard but you. Come on, Mr. Courtney. In you go.
Last passenger, fasten him in for the takeoff.
Last passenger, ready for the takeoff.
Kathy, where are you?
Up here, over your head.
Stop floating around. Come down here and unfasten me.
All right, I'll try. But we're beyond the law of gravity. We're on the way to Venus with 1,800 conservationists.
How did you get out of a harness?
A steward set me free, then floated away.
I have to talk to you.
Me? You threatened to kill me, remember?
Yes, I remember.
You could have, Mitch, in time. But you never told Schocken who or where I was. Why didn't you?
Because I love you, Kathy. And I think that for a long time I've been coming over to your side.
And you're willing to face life on Venus?
Yes. It's time people got a break.
People, not consumers. Oh, I like hearing you say that. And I love you too, Mitch. Oh, Mitch. Mitch, you broke my hold on your harness.
Come back here. I just wanted to put my arms around you.
Oh, there'll be plenty of time for that on Venus.
Come back here.
Unbuckle your harness and catch me.
I can't. Who invented this crazy gimmick anyway?
Oh, Mitch. Mitch, you've stopped talking like an advertising man.
kiss me.
CBS Radio Workshop has presented part two of The Space Merchants, adapted for radio by Charles S. Monroe. Original music composed and conducted by Samuel Matlofsky. Produced and directed in New York by Paul Roberts.
The CBS Radio Workshop has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
And through the rebroadcast facilities of WBAI in New York City, where we are offering a tribute, the first of a few over the next few months, to Grand Master, Grand Editor, Grand Writer, Grand Person, Frederick Pohl, who died 2 days ago at the age of 93 years old and was a friend to WBAI in a number of ways over the years, as long as he lived in this area, and BAI was a Pacifica radio station. He was good to us, and to me particularly. We worked together on a couple of projects. And as I said earlier, if anybody should have an old air check or copy of The Gold at the Starbow's End by Fred Pohl that I produced in, probably about 1975 or 76, I would give this tooth, which is about to be extracted anyway, to have a copy of that. So anyway, if you would like to call up and discuss the work of Fred Pohl or science fiction and fantasy in general, the Hugo Awards, which were given out this last weekend, although I didn't find anything so absolutely astounding about them, no pun intended, you can give us a call and we can talk on the air. We have about, 10 minutes in which to do that. The telephone number here at WBAI, until we move, I imagine, which hopefully should be somewhere in the next few months, is 212-650-5782. Again, 212-650-5782. And you can visit Hour of the Wolf's online home at ourwolf.com, ourwolf.com, and also on Facebook. There is an Hour of the Wolf group there. Let's see. Now, I have to again remind myself, I still didn't even bring it up on my little search thingy here, but I'm going to go to ourwolf.com myself because I want to remind you all about our next reading, which is this Tuesday at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. Our readers will be Michael Swanwick and Rick Bowes. So That's you know, as good as it gets, gang. I hope you will be there. I hope Michael will have stuff to say about Fred Pohl there as well. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, I thought this was really amazing. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much. I heard earlier at 6:30 today on WBAI a program that came on that was talking about how way back in 1946 and 47, there was a sort of an advertising campaign. It was quite a show. It was and they were taking the risk out of democracy was the title that came from KPFK in produced in I think 1988, and this woman had brought it back to us and you can hear it in the archives. It was a half-hour program, just quite amazing.
I'm going to have to check that out.
And it just, you know, ties in so much with Robert Knight's wonderful show that he just finished, an amazing, he is such an amazing artist.
He's one of the treasures here at WBAI.
I hope he would get another award for this program that he just put together because it was so sensational. I'm Zabby from I do radio as also WUSB Stony Brook Radio.
Oh, good. The fellow who's coming on the air in but 12 minutes.
Yes,
is
Lister. He does it well.
And no, a different WUSB person.
I'm on
Ahmad Ali. Yes.
Yes, of course. And also, Lister does his show after. Tomorrow night.
And USB is like the other station. There aren't that many stations in this country that have science fiction programs, but WUSB has one called Destinies.
Yes, and that is a fabulous.
That's a newbie show. It's only been around since the mid-70s.
Right. And also Emmanuel Goldstein does a show with us as well.
Oh, really? Does he now?
Yes.
Okay. Turncoat, huh?
He was on the 7 o'clock tonight.
And what is your show on USB?
Mine is Mondays, A Woman's Perspective on Politics. A Woman's Perspective on Politics, and I probably will rerun either Monday or Tuesday this show by Robert Knight. And my goodness, your show. It's just quite, because that should be on the during the day, that show, because it's the history with Martin Luther King at the end of the show. I mean, we've been, the name of the war has changed. It was Vietnam, now it's Syria. It's a shift in names all the time. The war changes, the same old story, the same old protests. I also have a website called runprimaries.webs.com because I have a master's in sociology and a degree in accounting. I'm an accountant, actually, but I pioneered social, economic, and political accounting, looking at the cost and benefits of our social institutions and our economic institutions. And I mean, right now we're in fascism. Okay, we're here. Aaron Russo or whatever. I'm not sure. He did a show, a movie, a special. He died a while back. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. But it was, we have fascism right here. And I mean, this show that you did, you know, just fits right in. And it's just... It's just such a beautiful blend on WBAI of everything.
And yeah, so there's hope for us.
Oh, well,
I believe.
There's hope. My hope is that I've been studying this now. I've been studying local politics for quite a while.
Well, I was thinking of hope for WBAI and hope for radio.
Oh, of course. There's
because, you know, everybody is spelling our doom.
Right, right.
Because we had to get rid of pretty much all of our staff,
and we're
in such bad shape. But we have good programs on this station.
Oh, of course you do. Of course you do. And of course,
like you do at USB.
Yes, we do too.
Or you have at USB, I should say. Bad English.
Yes. And you see, also, though, the Pacifica programs, like Against the Grain, Against the Grain, not this past Wednesday, but the Wednesday before, it had Emma James on it talking about women who are unwaged and who are invisible, who are unwaged, not getting paid.
Well, let me tell you a name of a science fiction short story by a woman who wrote under the name James Tiptree Jr. called The Women Men Don't See. And this is how often can you say this is one of the great works of science fiction? But there are many of them. And James Tiptree, who was actually Alice Sheldon, you want to talk about invisible women. That story It's well worth your reading, and I think, as a woman doing a political radio show, I think it would fascinate you.
Yes, absolutely. Now, the women, men don't see, that's
correct.
The name of the book?
That's the name of, it's a novella.
Okay, a novella.
It's probably in, you know, like, the best stories of James Tiptree Jr., or in one of her collections. She's been dead a few years now. Send me an email and I'll send you the exact information.
Well, you're a dear. I want to also tell you that the solution that I had is that people like yourself, like Robert Knight, like some of the engineers, Uncle Sidney Smith, all wonderful people, smart people, a lot of good people there who lost the jobs. I had said a long time ago they could all run for city council. We could have had New York City Council taken over by some WBAI astute people who could have joined Mr. Barron, who had been the only one there, go up against
the others. We've had WBAI people run for mayor. Ruth Messinger was a WBAI person.
Yeah.
I like to remind people. Yeah. I engineered her show.
Wow. Well, listen, March, I just left a message for Mr. Knight, Robert Knight. He could have ran for mayor. He could have run in 2012 and run a primary, a Democratic primary against Obama, and he would have been able to put the issues, set the agenda of the issues, because on this show I commented about at 6:30 tonight.
Yeah. By the way, I'm running out of
okay,
time.
Okay, dear. Well, anyway, they said that they set the agenda they have so that everything is limited. Unbelievable. So early, 1946.
Okay, I want the name of your website again, please.
Run Primaries. That's runprimaries.webs. That's WEB for brilliant, S for strategy, .com.
Okay, and your show at WUSB is on Mondays at what time?
1:30 to 3 p.m.
Very good. Well, pleasure speaking with you.
It's a pleasure speaking with you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, thanks. Bye bye. Let me see. I don't think I can sneak another call in because the call went away. But we have all two phone lines here. But that gives me all of 90 seconds to tell you about the reading. Come to the reading. Okay. Richard Bowes, Michael Swanwick, Tuesday, September 10th. Doors will open at 6:30 p.m. at the Soho Gallery for Digital Art, which is at 138 Sullivan Street. I think I said 183 Sullivan before, but it's not. It's 138 Sullivan Street between Houston and the street formerly known as Prince. And admission is free, but we do ask for donations at the door. I'll have Terrence Taylor asking for donations at the door. He's reading next month, but this month he's going to do the door and help us out there. And Rick Bowes on September 11th, pretty much whenever we can on WBAI, we broadcast his short story, There's a Hole in the City, and I'm going to do that again in a couple of weeks. But come hear him read from his new novel, Dust Devil on a Quiet Street. And Michael Swanwick has a new novel coming out that he's, in fact, finishing writing. It's another Darger and Who's It novel. And he's just, you know, one of the most wonderful writers of all time, as Frederick Pohl was. So I hope to see you there. I will be hosting, and hopefully you'll be listening, and we can all go out for dinner afterward. We go to a nearby pub, and if you can afford to donate something on the way in, great. If you can't afford to donate anything on the way in, all the more reason to come and enjoy a free reading. A good time will be had by all who attend. I promise you that much. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you all for listening. All good wishes and condolences to the family and friends of Frederick Pohl, of which there are many. That's P-O-H-L, by the way, if you want to look it up. Read the novel, The Space Merchants. You heard a highly condensed version of it. That was a lot of fun. And you saw how prescient it was for 1957. Read the Heechee novels, starting with Gateway. Gateway is a wonderful book. And his short stories were quite something as well. So, again, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Ahmad Ali, coming to you over these same airwaves in just 2 minutes. Take good care. Happy New Year, everybody, and have a great week.
WBAI, New York.
The world won't get no better. We gotta change again, just you and me.
Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the pills. Make them happy before they pass away. Oh, yeah.
Wake up.
The morning I wake up, just for the breath of life, I thank my maker. My mom say I come from hustlers and shakers. My mind building on skyscrapers and acres. He said, take us back to where we belong. I try to write a song as sweet as the Psalms. Though I'm the type to bear arms and wear my heart on my sleeve. Even when I fail in God, I believe. Read the days and weave through the maze. And the seasons so amazing. Feed them and raise them. Seasons are aging. Earthquakes, wars and rumors. I want us to get by, but we more than consumers. We more than shooters, more than looters. Created in this image so God lived through us. And even in this generation, living through computers, only love, love, love can reboot us.
Come on, wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed.
Oh, wake up, everybody.
Wake up, everybody. Wake up. It's time to wake up. You hear the saber rattling going on again. We're getting the okey-doke once again. Once again, we're going into war. This president who promised us, who said he's going to get us out of this war. And what are we doing? We're going back into war. Same old stuff, same old story. Wake up, everybody. When are we going to get change? All this change. You know what it is? It's when the love of power is more important than the power of love.
Verily I say unto you, power! 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 Get up from there! Power! Child.
Remove.
Power! Now hear it. Power! Power! Catch it. When God said something, he can't take it back. You can't take it back, Lord. I got your number here. You said you'd bless me going in and bless me coming out. You said everything I put my hands on, you would bless it. Come on, shout amen, somebody. God said I'll make you the head and not the tail. Everything you set your hands to, I will bless it if you will walk in my ways. But God is looking for a people who will learn how to take him at his word. I don't have to feel something to believe it. I don't have to look at something to believe it. All I gotta do is see the word. And if God said it, let every man, let every devil be a liar. But let God be true. He cannot take his word back. Turn around in your seat, look at somebody and say, do you know the devil's a liar?
Power!
And say, Lord, I believe it.
Power! Hear me.
Power! And he'll make a way where there is no way.
Hey,
God.
Why?
So he can't escape. There ain't no way out. He's gonna die personally to bring deliverance. Shout power! Power!
That's what he was doing.
Power!
Put your shoes on. You going somewhere. Can you shout amen, somebody? Come on, shout amen, somebody. Can you shout amen, somebody? Shout amen, somebody. Put your shoes on your feet. Gird your clothes around you and follow me. Power! Power! Power!
Jesus talking.
Power!
Don't get mad now. But. Thank God has a way. And when his face hits the cold air. Oh. Hallelujah.
Power!
The Lord.
Power! Power!
God knows how to set you free. The devil may tie you up, but it's God who sets you free. It's the devil who puts you in prison, but it's God who opens the doors. It's the devil who puts sickness on you, but it's God who heals your body. It's the devil who breaks up a home, but it's God who puts it back together again.
God will make a way where there is no way. If you believe it, shout amen, somebody.
Ah! Out in the street, they call it murder.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under